The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises. Clarity or prelude to chaos in the Big Ten East Saturday in Columbus? Is it time to tell your kids about Iowa going to the playoff? And what do you make of trash-talking billboards? This is the College Game Day podcast for Wednesday, October 18th. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel. Pete, you brought something to my attention early this morning via text that there was a, to use your word, a kerfuffle over some billboards in the Tuesday night action. We like to start the Wednesday podcast giving some of the Tuesday night games a little love. There was a complete, thorough, and utter beatdown in the port city of Mobile last night as South Alabama laid the wood to Southern Mississippi. And after the game, Kane Womack took exception to, of all things, billboards on the highway. Tell me what you discovered this morning about the billboards.
Well, it was interesting because, first of all, South Alabama just thumped Southern Miss. You know, these are two proud programs. Southern Miss has been good for, you know, a long time. They're not having a good season this year under Will Hall. It was a little jarring to see the tenor of that game. And obviously it ended 55-3. The billboards, Southern Miss, put up in Mobile is,
wait, say that again, because Pat McAfee makes fun of the way that I say what, because I say what instead of what. So now I'm going to make fun of the way you say the port city in Alabama. Say that again.
Mobile.
Try again. More Beale, less Mo.
Mobile?
There you go. Okay. Carry
Mobile.
On.
Yeah. All right. Carry like on. Like Bradley Beal. Mobile. Yes. All right. I appreciate the Southern education. If you ever come here, I'll walk you through Worcester, Gloucester, and all of the unpronounceable ports in my state.
But Worcester is a tough one because it looks like Worcester.
Yes.
But it's Worcester. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll walk you through. Muscle Shoals is always welcome up here. No judgment. So a couple of the billboards that popped up, I'm looking at the Hattiesburg American all over this major kerfuffle here. So it says, welcome to Port City, which I assume is what they call Mobile down there.
Correct.
It is a beautiful, yes, Port City. I go every year for the Senior Bowl. Great oysters. Love the town. And then it says, welcome to, I believe it says, welcome to Hub City or R City.
Hub City.
It's Hub, I think. Okay, Hub City, which I would assume is what the folks in Hattiesburg call themselves. So they basically did a billboard plan. And then in Mobile, they put in University of Southern Mississippi, a major university experience at a cost comparable to your local university. So they're throwing some shade on city rights and pride. And then they're throwing some shade at the bursar's office for how much they're charging at South Al. So, again, Kane Womack not happy about the billboard takeover.
It was, I read the article, and as you have aptly put it, it's great when the coaches are wonderfully thin-skinned.
Oh, love it.
And my initial reaction to this was eye roll. And I thought, oh, great. Not that you sent it. I thought it was cool you sent it. I thought, here's another wonderfully thin-skinned coach. I click on the article, read through it. Then I look at the billboards. And I thought, you know, those billboards were disrespectful. They were, and they weren't even really funny. They didn't seem playful.
No.
And the last one about, hey, look, man, I mean, Southern Mississippi is a cool place. You know, I've been there. I'm not sure you need to be throwing shade from there at South Alabama or anywhere else, really, to be honest. And so it seemed petty. And I thought, yeah, okay, I can get where Kane was coming from on this. And then the best line was, though, probably he said, Kane Womack in the aftermath said, whoever the administrators were, the twist on this is that Kane Womack is a Southern Mississippi alum.
Correct.
That whoever the administrator was who thought this was a good idea probably sounded good in a board meeting, but it'll get your ass kicked on the playground. And that's pretty much what happened.
All the chef's kisses. All the chef's kisses. I believe his dad coached at Southern Miss for a long time under Jeff Bauer. His dad, Dave Womack, was a longtime old Southern hand, created a lot of really high-end defenses down there through his path. So the playground line, I was reading it and I was like, okay, this is fine. The playground line, I was like, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. Can't you see him driving to work at like 4:45, driving past one of those billboards and just being like, those.
Either that, or he drove past him and said, there it is.
Yep.
There's what I can use. Probably this poor Southern Mississippi players, they show up in Mobile and they're out there for a football game and they're ready. They're fired up to play a football game. And then all of a sudden, here come the Jaguars and they're on some kind of weird crusade about a billboard.
Yeah, Will Hall, poor Will Hall is fighting for his job. He doesn't need you to go just throw some shade at the best team in the league when you go to play there on a Tuesday and fire them all up.
And then Rich Rod got another win, late field goal. They pull one out. There was a good game between Liberty and MTSU, and that concludes our Tuesday extravaganzas. Because I'm going
Tuesdays
to promise
with Reese.
You, yeah. Well, we want to. Yeah, we want. Well, don't put me in that category yet. I'm old, but not that old. Shout out or reference to the great book from Mitch Albom, I think, is what you were going for. Yes. There. Tuesdays with Maury. But we always want to start with, you want to do the inverted pyramid style of podcasting and start with the big games and go down. But when you have a billboard kerfuffle and somebody talking about kicking ass on the playground, I mean, you got to start there, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You don't get much of
that. You guys hear him on the headset, Major Applewhite's the OC. It's, keep going, Major. Keep going. Keep growing, Major. Keep growing. This is for the one on I-5. This is for the one on Main Street.
I know. I promised that this was the end, but I do have one more thing, and this is not me throwing shade. I don't know that you find better examples of how much coaches love this game than if you wander into a Tuesday night game and see the various faces that you've seen over the years in different places. Rich Rodriguez with that circuitous journey from nearly national championship at West Virginia to taking the Alabama job and changing his mind, going back, then going to Michigan, having it go sideways, then to Arizona. And next thing you know, you're coaching on a Tuesday night in Jacksonville, Alabama, in front of tens of people, it looked like. Maybe there was a better crowd than it looked. And also on the sidelines, I looked, I was like, hey, that's Rick Trickett. You know, longtime offensive line guru. He's back there with Rich at Jacksonville. Major Applewhite, head coach at Houston. Rising star, maybe. He's on a Tuesday night in the port city of Mobile laying double nickels on somebody. It's, it's a tough business, man. It's a tough business.
You hang around long enough, the a lot of logos change, the faces stay the same. So Rich Rodriguez in the post game looked legitimately fired up after his field goal kicker went derriere over T. Kittle and still made his 40-something yard field goal at the end. He looked downright giddy. Look, that's as good of a win as you can have in that league. Western Kentucky's a really good team. Yeah. So Rich Rodriguez, coach a little ball. No one ever doubted that.
Yeah, say what you want about Rich Rod. He can coach.
Oh, yeah.
Always has been able to. Also has a punter that there was a still shot caught, I think, after he got knocked rear end over T. Kettle, showing either the officials or someone on the other side why he thought they were number one.
Yeah.
I think someone captioned it. That's just the Australian way to say hello. I think he's an Australian lad. Bloke. Not lad. He's an Australian bloke who's over here punting for the Gamecocks. Let's get to the main event. College Game Day is going to Columbus. And I think the narrative has been, Pete, that we will get some clarity in the Big Ten East. Not sure if I'm buying that right now, because what it could be is setting up for the chaos of a three-way tie if all of the home teams win. Now, maybe they won't. So you will get some clarity in this sense. The loser is going to need some type of help to get back into both the Big Ten East race and also into the college football playoff picture. But
yeah, the loser is going to have to beat Michigan, right? Is it that simple?
Okay. Well, yeah, pretty much. It's pretty much that simple. If the three home teams win, you'll have a three-way tie, assuming no other losses to anyone else. Or Michigan beats them both, and that's the end of that. You know, which with still football to play and perceptions to change over the next few weeks, if I had to wager right here on the Wednesday podcast on October 18th, and we were making that as one of our picks, I would say going to be a great game Saturday. I'll let you know on Friday which way I'm leaning to pick in that game. And I think Michigan's going to beat both of them. But, you know, that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me right now, yes. Too, by the way. Perceptions might change.
Yeah. I really want to see both of them in this game. I want to see Penn State's pass defense go up against a prolific pass offense. I think that's fair. You know, that's fair. Look, they're giving up like 120 yards a game. They're number one in the country with a bullet. They've got a great secondary. You know, can you stop Marvin Harrison Jr.? All right, now is your chance. Can you figure out a way to slow down Cade Stover, who's having a heck of a season? You know, can your, you know, high-end corners like Kalen King, can Kalen King lock up Marvin Harrison Jr.? You know, so like there are, I think I'm bullish on Penn State talent wise right now. I think this is James Franklin's best team there. But I also think this is Jim Harbaugh's best team. And it's Ryan Day's most unique team in that if they are going to win this game, they are not going to win it 42-38. They are going to have to clobber them defensively. And look, Ohio State has a top five defense in many categories. They've really, really played well. So it will be interesting to see Ryan Day's game management, knowing that they may not be able to lean on the offense like they have in the past. When you talk to scouts about Ohio State, they bring up the year Lathan Ransom's having at safety. Sonny Styles might be the best young player in their entire program, the sophomore nickel, who should be a freshman in college. He came early. Denzel Burke has reestablished himself as a high-end NFL draft prospect. Obviously, they have the two rush edges who are super talented, have had, I would say, inconsistent production, although Penn State fans would not say that about JT.
I'm going to say
Tui Mololau.
I want to say, and this has been a difficult pronunciation for me because I want to say just sort of based on phonetics, Tui Mololau, but you sort of just flow through all of it. It's Tui Mololau, I believe, is the way he prefers it.
People who watch Game Day would be very impressed at how, and this is a compliment, how precise and anal in a good way Reese Davis is about pronouncing every single player's name right. And he is a go-to. This pronunciation game is new for me after being a print guy for so long. And Reese takes pride in getting all of these young men's name right in a very impressive way. So, you know, on Saturday morning at like 6:45, when someone's like, "Hey, I got to talk about this game," literally it's like Reese, and they just say the name, and Reese says it back, like just so he's like a phonetic repeater, and then usually the person like says it twice. It is quite an impressive trait, the pride Reese takes in that.
Well, thank you. A quick story, and then I want to get back to JTT for a second, something I did this morning in terms of watching a little video. There was a pronunciation situation a few years ago. You remember Nick Shamanik, who played quarterback for Texas Tech?
I do, yeah.
Okay. So early in the season, they were in some noon windows, had some warm-up shots of him, and I was pronouncing his name as Nick Shamanik. And Texas Tech got all bent out of shape. And they're saying, why is Reese saying the name like that? So I got the sort of snarky email from somebody out there, and I just went, copied and pasted their pronunciation guide and sent it back and said, what is it that you would like me to say then? Because they had the first syllable, shim, all in capital letters, which means that's where you want the emphasis. And then the rest of it was in lowercase. They eventually fixed it. But that's one of the things when I sometimes go to the COSIDA convention a few years ago and speak at this and do the COSIDA Academic All-America Hall of Fame. And if I'm speaking, I'm saying from my standpoint, you guys often ask me, what can you do to help me? And the number one thing you can do is have an accurate pronunciation guide. Now, I like to be able to look at the whole list and look at them phonetically and sort of have it in my head. I'm not 100% on this. I mean, there's somebody out there listening to this podcast right now that's going, I remember you mispronounced this guy's name. And you're right, I probably did. But the one thing they've also done that has been extraordinarily helpful is to have the players or the SID, better when the players do it, actually say their name. And then there's that little logo on their website. You can click on the ear and hear them say it. And that's extraordinarily helpful. But I still need the written guide for the things that you're talking about. Like maybe Saturday morning, there's a guy, I'm not quite sure. I want to be able to look at it fast. And anyway, I digress. But Tui Moloau, Pete, I commissioned Marissa Dowling to look at how often this year and last year in the Penn State game, he lined up left and right, you know, meaning he was going against Olu Fashanu or not. And then I went back this morning and looked at some tape from last year's game. And he made a huge play, a deflection that led to an interception early in the game from being lined up across from Fashanu. But the caveat is that Penn State was running a screen pass, and Fashanu, that was not his assignment. He went out to get into the screen. JTT deflected. It led to the interception. The famous interception came from the other side. And some of the pressures did too. He did make a tackle where he probably
Olu
got loose.
In that game, Reese?
What now?
Cut you off. Didn't Olu get hurt in that game last year?
He might have. I don't recall that.
But I don't think he was finished the game.
Yeah.
Because I wrote the story about him coming back to Penn State. And I remember, this is again from 9 months ago. So, but I remember him having a pretty significant injury, missing a decent chunk of time. And I believe it occurred in that Ohio State game.
It very well could have, Pete. I was watching a cut up and he was. He was in for a good portion of the game. It seemed like it from the cut-ups and when those fell. A lot of the damage in terms of pressures and both sacks came when he was on the defensive left side, which is Penn State's offensive right. He did have a couple of pressures from the other side too. He's moved around a good bit this year. And I said all that to say, I'm really excited about that matchup. You know, sort of the game within the game. I just wonder how often we're going to see it. Although, you know, Jack Sawyer, he moves around too. You know, he goes back and forth, and Knowles will move them back and forth. And I'm really interested to see what the scheme and what the strategy will be Saturday for using those two guys to see if they can disrupt Penn State's offense.
So just to put a bow on that, he did have a season-ending injury in the Ohio State game last year. I don't know what juncture it happened, but when JTT went off, as much as any defensive player has gone off in a game last year, it might have been one of the defining defensive performances in the country last year. He was not going against Olu. So just to put a bow on that.
Right. He was on, and that's what I was saying. Yes. A lot of it was even when he was lined up on the other side.
Yes. Cause they had a backup. I think the right tackle went to left. And then they had a backup at right. And I think Jim Knowles did a good job of seeing that, because the backup tackle, you know, you talk about Olu Fashanu's top five pick. You talk about the other tackles, good young player. That, you know, that third tackle is probably not going to match up too well against a guy who's going to be a top 15 pick. So that's good coaching there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm interested to see that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I'm interested to see if, interested is an overused word. I think a big part of the game will be that, and also whether Penn State can get the ball downfield, no matter how much James doesn't want to talk about it. I don't know that you can just win a high-level game like this without a certain complement of big plays, or at least making the other side believe that you can get them. And I think that's a really big deal on Saturday.
Well, you think about Michigan last year, Ohio State. When I look back in that game, was it Colson Loveland down the middle that just sort of pierced the heart of their defense? Yeah, it was close. Like, you need a player or two like that if you're going to puncture the defense like Michigan did to Ohio State last year. Jim Knowles is a savvy coordinator. Nobody's going to know better and play in a way that you can't beat them over the top. So I agree with you. I think that is going to be a really interesting subplot here, because you can stack the box and dare him. And I don't know if Penn State's downfield passing game is going to, you know, is of the caliber to slice and dice like Michigan did last year, to really just, you know, puncture the wounds, if you will.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
What else? What else in this game are we not thinking of? Like, for instance, the numbers are okay, for Penn State's rushing offense. But for some reason, it just hasn't felt quite as explosive as I thought it was going to be. But I look at the numbers and I'm like, they're running the ball great. You know, I don't know what maybe I just had it in my mind that they were going to be ripping off, tons of 50 and 60 yard runs or some such thing. But how do you feel when you watch their offense right now? What do you think about it? How efficient is it? How good is it going to be against a fairly elite defense in Ohio State?
Yeah. And I think Ohio State has depth at defensive tackle, which again is a non-exciting thing to talk about, but I think they have really good players there. So I think they're best equipped of anyone that Penn State played to really put some resistance up front. And look, Penn State's 15th in the country. They have played, though, what I would call one really good defense, right? Mm-hmm. In Iowa. And after that, I would say their run game has been very efficient, Reese. I would not say that it's been explosive. And I think if they're going to win on Saturday, they have to be more on the explosive side than the efficient side, because I think Ohio State's push is going to negate some of those 3-4 yard grinded outs.
I'm looking at numbers right now, Pete, and our senses were correct. Ohio State and Penn State are tied with 4 runs all season of longer than 20 yards. That's 112th in the country. Runs of longer than 10 yards, Penn State has done a bit better than the Buckeyes. Ohio State only has 17 of those runs. That's 127th, tied for 127th. Only 4 teams in the country have fewer 10-yard runs than Ohio State. And we've wondered about their offensive line play. You know, they've got the great receivers. But, that's we saw Travion Henderson get loose. We know that they have guys who are capable of, if they get out of the gate, they can go. But getting them out of the gate before it slams shut has been problematic for the Buckeyes. And Penn State, same deal. They've got guys. They've got offensive linemen. You would think that would be able to do it. It just hasn't happened very often yet.
Yeah, I'd expect Travion Henderson to play, Reese. And that's just reading between the lines on Ryan Day's comments the last 2 weeks about how he would have been ready 2 weeks ago. And they need him. And I think they know that they need him. I do wonder that the intriguing guy, so Travion Henderson is clearly their best back. There's no question about that. But obviously now they're dealing with injury to Mayan Williams. They're dealing with an injury to Chip Traynham. And then Dallin Hayden has done nothing but produce for them. And he kind of disappeared after that great Maryland game last year in some big moments. Ryan had just said 2 weeks ago that they want to redshirt him. And then he went and ran all over the Boilermakers in West Lafayette. So I'll be curious. He has a little bit more wiggle than those other two guys. I think Mayan Williams is a great roll back. It reminds me of, when Bill Belichick would use LeGarrette Blount at the end of the fourth quarter in November and nobody wanted to tackle him. You know what I mean? Mayan's just one of those big, powerful rushers. He had 14 touchdowns last year. You know, what a great chess piece for an offensive coordinator. Again, not sure of his status, and we'll be updating all that on game day on Saturday morning. But I do think that this offensive line for Ohio State, you have the two tackles who went really high in the draft. You have one guard, Donovan Jackson, who's probably going to be a top 40 player in the country, like draft pick. But after that, there's, Luke Whipler, the center, left and was like a fifth round pick. They're young and they're green and they're coming along, and they have not had a test like this. So I think there's one matchup determines the game. It's how does Ohio State's line hold up against Penn State's really good front seven?
And then there's and we'll talk a lot about this on game day, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, we're going to now and Friday on the podcast when we make the picks. The mental hurdle that Penn State has against this team. I mean, James Franklin's 1-8 against Ohio State. Well-documented struggles. They haven't won a road game like this against a top 10 team. Poor record against top 10 teams overall. I do think it's fair to point out that Franklin accumulated some of those losses while building, you know, building his program, which certainly he didn't arrive with it being in great shape.
No.
And also to be, the numbers are the numbers, but also to be totally fair about it, you have to look back and say, okay, how many of those did you expect them to win that they didn't? But the one critique that I believe is fair is their inability to finish them, which mm-hmm. they haven't been able to do. They had they did it in 16 when they won the Big Ten, but they had a
big block punt in that game, right?
Yeah, in 16, a block field goal, and they returned it. Yeah, block field goal return for a touchdown, yeah.
And they got snubbed from the playoff, which is why Penn State's president pushed for an expanded playoff.
Yeah,
until he had to vote for it, and then it was a new president. And they didn't, because college football makes no sense. Eric Barron.
It's right, but you know, I will say this: they were rightly left out of the playoff that year.
I agree,
but yeah. I mean, they lost 49-10 to Michigan that year. That's too big a loss, but at least in my judgment. But they had in 17, the year after that, Saquon housed the opening kickoff.
I remember
they had a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter in the horseshoe and lost. The next year, they had a 12-point lead with 8 minutes left in the game and lost. Ran the ball on a 4th-and-5 on the final drive. You remember Chase Young crushed Miles Sanders, and Franklin and Trace McSorley sort of got lit up over the combination of the play call and the read with, you know, that far to go. 2019, even though they fell behind 21-0, I think we touched on this, Will Levis got him back in the game, got him to within 4 in the fourth quarter, couldn't get over the hump. And even last year, before JTT took over, they were up in the fourth quarter.
They controlled that game.
Yeah.
And for 3/4 of it.
Right. So they have, there is something to it. Not just the raw record, but there is something to that mental hurdle of can they get over the hump against these guys, particularly in that stadium. And It'll be a huge measuring stick, because I do think with some of the advantages they have in terms of, you know, veterans, you mentioned offensive line, if not now, when? You know, I mean, it's kind of like if you're going to beat them in Columbus, this is a pretty good year to try to do it, even with those ridiculously talented wide receivers and those ridiculously talented rush guys. So I think it's a really big moment for Penn State, James Franklin. Don't misunderstand this. I'm not saying, well, you got to fire James Franklin if they don't. I'm not saying that. He's done a great job. I'm just saying this is a big, big moment for them to get over the hump.
Well, what was his famous quote?
The year, I think it was 17 when they lost that lead in State College. It was something like good to great. It was like great yeah. program, excellent pro. There was some differentiator that like keeps coming up and keeps coming up. And really, it honestly, like much like Scott Frost branded his program perfectly by saying they were watching the same movie, like mm-hmm. James Franklin distilled his program's like upper middle class issues into a fortune cookie. Like they're in the cul-de-sac, but they're not in the penthouse. And they need to win this game to get in the penthouse and then have a chance for when Michigan comes there for a, you know, for a bigger prize in a few weeks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Best in Game is brought to you by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises. Welcome in Ryan McGee now, and we're going to talk other games too, but this one commands so much of the spotlight, particularly on this schedule. Ryan, we were just talking about the significance of elevating from good to great, to use James Franklin's phrase, but I would even make it a smaller step. I would say from really, really good or outstanding to excellent. You know, they're near the top and have been for the last several years, but there's another step to take for Penn State. How do you view this opportunity and the stakes for Penn State and James Franklin in trying to make that next step?
I mean, Ohio State's the roadblock. I mean, they are. You know, I knew that Penn State had a hard time getting around Ohio State, but I think it's, what, 6 years in a row they lost to them. They've only beaten them five times this century. And, you know, and at least a couple of those were one-point losses. You know, most of those, a lot of those were single digit losses. But this is it. I mean, this is the hump they have not been able to get over. With all due respect to everyone else, this is the game they haven't won. And so James, to me, it kind of sums up the James Franklin experience. I like him a lot. I think sometimes, maybe like last week, he'll overstep and make some people uncomfortable with what he has to say. But the reality is, this is kind of who they are.
Quote from James: "We have worked hard to do those things, but we are not an elite football team yet. As hard as we work to go from average to good and from good to great, that work it's going to take to get to an elite program, it's going to be just as hard, the ground and the distance that we've already traveled." Then more later. "So we are going to break through and become an elite program by doing all the little things." So it's telling that they're still sort of at that precipice right now. Nobody's going to argue with the program James Franklin has, the talent. I think this is the most talent. Scouts think it's the most talent. Scouts think Penn State is more talent than Ohio State right now. That doesn't mean they're going to win, but scouts think that at this juncture. When you look at the Olufoshanas and the Chop Robinsons, and you really go through with the pair of tailbacks and Drew Aller's potential, this is Penn State's time. But it's interesting. History seeps into Vegas because Ohio State's a 4.5-point favorite. Location obviously has a lot to do with that. So I'm fascinated. I think it's going to be an awesome game.
Yeah, me too. But again, till Penn State gets over that hump, you can't consider them a national championship contender. But I'm with you. I think they're super talented. I like James Franklin. I like the culture, you know, the buzzword. I like going there. I like visiting with those guys. I like sitting down and talking with him. I've liked talking to his players for the last 10 years. But I just, until they win that game, it's going to be impossible for us to all, you know, consider them being at the next level, because they won't be there.
Pete and I will pick the game on the Friday podcast. You will not. Are they going to win the game?
I think they are. I keep waiting on Ohio State to get going, like we all do, I think. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. might be the best player in college football, but I don't think he's given an opportunity to show the world that. Maybe this is it. And again, maybe this is me. I keep going back to the third Saturday in October, Reese, but maybe it's me experiencing that a year ago, which is, you know, if you really believe you can win the game, and I really believe Penn State believes they can win the game. There was, when I go back to Knoxville a year ago, there was a difference when I walked around campus and when I talked to the team, and even when I talked to all the veteran guys who came in town for the game, Al Wilson and Carl Pickens and all these guys, they believe they could win the game. That had not been the case for 10 years. And I believe what communication I've had with Penn State is you guys, we've all been doing this a while. We can tell when a coach is just telling us what we want to hear or what they think might make the show. But when a coach genuinely believes, I think you can tell a difference. And James Franklin always plays it very close to the vest. His tone doesn't change. You know, he's the guy that always Michigan, 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 Michigan. He's that guy, right? But mm-hmm. But I just sense in what little communication I've had with those guys that they genuinely believe. So, yeah, why not?
We'll see on Friday what Pete and I think. The other side of this has been one of the other themes in the Big Ten. Has been all of a sudden this fear that Iowa is going to get in the playoff, you know, because there's no one in line to beat them. Now, I said on the show Saturday, probably to the chagrin of some, that whoever comes out of the Big Ten West has zero chance of pulling that upset. I mean, Penn State's already trounced Iowa. I say zero, Well, look, we all know weird things happen in football. I just don't see it. However, as Iowa prepares to play Minnesota this week for Floyd of Rosedale, the one rivalry trophy, by the way, of the many that Minnesota plays for that PJ Fleck has not won yet with the Gophers. But Iowa has 5 wins this year when they've been outgained, which is the most in the country. They've got 3 wins when they've gained fewer than 250 yards. Nobody else in the country has more than 1. And they're the only team in the last 20 years to be at least 6-1 through 7 games and be outgained by 200 yards. And while we love to pile on poor old Brian Ferentz, they've lost their quarterback. They've lost their 2 best offensive threats and their 2 tight ends now with Eric Aull joining Luke Lachey on the injured list. And in a weird sort of way, I'm coming around on Iowa and learning and respecting what they've done and are doing. I've always respected Ferentz because Ferentz has done something that I think is one of the hardest things to do in coaching, and he's done it a couple of times at Iowa. When it starts going sideways or when it slips into a malaise, to turn it back around and win something or contend for something again is extraordinarily difficult. And Kirk has done that a couple of times at Iowa in his career. I made that analogy on, I was a guest on SEC radio with Dari Noka and Ian Fitzsimmons this morning. They were asking about Texas A&M. And that's what I think has happened to Jimbo Fisher. It's in a malaise. They're just chugging through quicksand. Getting it out of that is extraordinarily difficult. Iowa has done that in the past. That's where they are again, offensively. Yet, they're in contention. And I said all that to give them their due for winning the games. But the Louisville people got all bent out of shape when I said last week about them, if you are not good enough, a loss will find you. If you are not good enough, Iowa, a loss will find you. They might win the West, but they're not getting out of this 11-1. I know you can look at the list and say, well, who? You know, Minnesota, Rutgers, Northwestern, at Nebraska on that final Friday, I believe they're playing this year. I don't know which one it'll be. It'll be one of them, Pete. It'll be, they're not getting out of this at 11-1 when they're gaining 200 yards a game, backup quarterback, both tight ends gone. I mean, I don't see it.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Reese, on
they've won 11 of 13 football games.
Yeah, it's amazing.
11 of 13 football games going back to last year. They obviously got shut out by Penn State this year, and then they lost to Nebraska last year on the Thanksgiving Friday. But like, it's hard to win football games. It's hard to win football games in the state of Iowa, where the 3 of us could have probably been second team all state, right? So it's hard to
I'd be third or honorable mention.
Yeah. I would have been the second team beat writer on the high school paper. But the point is, like, people are trying to wish away the Kirk Ferentz era. And look, it is not an aesthetic beauty. But I would tell you this, there are 0 coaches in the country that I can think of who could have gone there and done a better job than he's done. Absolutely. Like, it's been a remarkable, remarkable job. And you may not like the jokes about the under, and you may not like what it looks like on Saturday, but man, is that guy one relentlessly, and pity the guy who has to go there and follow that lead. Now, again, you can go hire some air raid guru and it might look prettier, but boy, he has been defiant to the formula, and the formula has worked.
Yeah. And by the way, let me type into the computer here and let's ask AI Brian Ferentz what he thinks about all this, because that's only fooled me maybe 3 times this fall. But to the point, sometimes you are uncomfortable with your identity, but your identity is who you are and has gotten you to where you are. You know, I think about schools like, I don't know, let's say Georgia Tech, let's say Nebraska. Let's say schools that maybe don't particularly, or they aren't as entertained as they want to be when they go to a game at noon at Grant Field on a Saturday and watch the Paul Johnson offense. And then they go to their dorm room that night and watch a 52-45 shutout. But they also won 8 games and played on New Year's Day again. And so I think sometimes you have to appreciate what you have, because how many times have we seen, you know, unsettled, unhappy, whatever, we can do better than this. And the reality is that you don't, and maybe there's something to be said, guys, for if your offense is terrible, that, you know, it's not that hard to replace all these players that Reese is talking about, right? I mean, it's, you know, if you're missing a dynamic quarterback, it takes a lot to replace him. If you're missing two dynamic receivers, two dynamic tight ends, it takes a lot to replace him. If you don't have anyone dynamic at all, then maybe it just makes it easy to plug and play when you have injuries, because they just keep doing it.
I feel bad for Iowa in this sense. This summer,
the case for optimism at Iowa was based around 12 personnel, right? Brian Ferentz was with the Patriots when they had Gronkowski and Hernandez, which was revolutionary scheme-wise in how to use your tight ends. And so it was obviously they're going to run the ball a lot. It's Iowa, but they had two NFL draft pick weapons at tight end, which is rare. Most teams don't have that. So there's your identity. The quarterback was supposed to throw to him, and both of them are gone. The third string tight end has actually been out. He just came back to practice this week. So that's hard, man. Like, that's like, you know, mid-September, ripping it up and starting over. So, you know, but they keep finding a way. You know,
we're talking about Georgia's issues losing Brock Bowers. They're just going to roll in two more five-star tight ends with, with Delp and, I always get the name back. Is it? It's Lawson Lucky, right? It's I always want to juxtapose the first and last name. But
Lucky Lawson would be a cool name.
Lucky, so. Lucky Lawson would have definitely competed in the NASCAR Busch Series, like in 1986. just so you know, yeah.
Isn't there a movie? Isn't there a movie that's something similar to that?
Lucky Logan. All right, so
yeah, Logan. Yeah, so that's why I wanted to juxtapose the name. I think because son loves that movie.
It's great. I haven't seen it. Yeah. I keep getting ripped by some people on the social media because I keep making NASCAR references on this podcast. I'm just going to keep doing it. Logan Lucky was shot at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. James Bond was running around during a race, like shooting that movie. So it's a heist movie shot at a racetrack. But yeah, Logan Lucky. Yeah, I actually accidentally called him that, I think, on Marty McGee last week. So it is what it is.
But yeah, it's tough for Iowa. I still think Iowa's probably going to come out of the West, and it's just going to get more difficult for them, big picture, when the four teams from the Pac-12 come in and the divisions go away. Because while I've got the utmost respect for the way Kirk has found a way to win games and stuck to the formula, as you've said, it would be disingenuous to suggest they haven't benefited from being in the Big Ten West and being on side, just as Wisconsin has too. And you see Wisconsin now with Fickell, they're growing pains for sure, but they're getting there with looking at a little bit different way, a slightly different way, to approach offense without abandoning their running game. And that will probably serve them well.
Can we get USC to play Iowa in a bowl game this year?
Yes.
I think that would be this great, like, you get Ferentz to sit around and talk about, like, program building on special teams and on defense, and then you get Lincoln to get – I just think that's, like, the matchup that needs to happen.
I think so, too. McGee has brought up at least three times third Saturday in October. He's got an orange jersey behind his head for those of you who are watching on YouTube. So I'm not gonna let you go. Ryan, you and I are – deeply familiar with this series, and nobody ever wins just one in this series. You never win just one. Everybody goes on a tear. And, the 15 game tear that Alabama was on until last year might've been the longest. They usually run either four or like 10 or 11 somewhere in there before they get turned around and somebody tears down a goalpost. So what happens, but only you guys tear down the goalpost because there's not a game big enough for Alabama to do it. What happens Saturday in Tuscaloosa there, Ryan?
Well, I will say this, and this has nothing to do with where we went to school or that jersey actually is from that game in 81. Wasn't worn in the game, but it was worn on the sideline. But the equipment guy sent it to. But it was important that Tennessee won that game a year ago, not just for Tennessee, but Reese, you know this. I don't care which side of that you're on. It hurt your heart when everyone tried to say that game didn't matter anymore. The third Saturday in October didn't matter anymore. And to the point that I was pleading with conference officials, like, don't be prisoner of the moment here when schedule realignment happens within the conference and act like you can't play this game every year. the game has to be played every year, no matter what, how it's been. But yeah, when I was in school, Tennessee was in the middle of an 8-year losing streak. I'm still angry at Sirhan Stacey, by the way. But then Peyton Manning showed up in a streak. But to your point, there's never just one. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough this weekend because of where Tennessee is going. But I'll say this, when I was at the A&M game, the Tennessee-Texas A&M game last weekend, and in fact, on Friday, did an interview with kind of the three core members of the Tennessee defense. That defense is really good,
and people aren't
really talking about it. And I think everybody thinks about Air Raid and Heupel and whatever else, but the way Tennessee beat A&M was running the football, and that, you know, they've got three guys on that team that have a chance, you know, to certainly get into high triple digits, and a couple of them in the quadruple digits in rushing by the end of the year. So, and A&M was really, really good at stopping the run. And Tennessee still ran it on them all day. So I think it might end up being an old school third Saturday in October football game. I think we go into it talking about Milroe. We go into it talking about, you know, obviously Tennessee's quarterback who can throw the ball over the mountains and all those things, but can't complete a pass downfield, by the way, Joe Milton. And so I think that it might end up being a grinder like we saw with A&M and with Tennessee, you know, last weekend. So Tennessee has a chance. I don't think there's any question about that. And I wonder if, to our point about the mentality of these things, Penn State, you know, can't get past Ohio State, and Tennessee for 15 years couldn't get past Alabama, and now you wonder if Alabama's got it in their head a little bit, because every time they started to get momentum in that game a year ago, they lost it, and a lot of those guys are back. So it will really be interesting to see, and I'm excited to go down there. We're going to do Marty McGee and SEC Nation down there on Saturday, and I'm going to stick around for the game, and I will be an impartial member of the media.
Isn't it interesting the way these two teams have evolved?
Yep.
Tennessee's offensive line is playing better than Alabama's. Both teams are among the national leaders in sacks, but Alabama has given up a boatload of sacks, and Tennessee's, you know, been pretty good. They've given up, they're like top 30, I think, in the country. But for Alabama, only USF, Old Dominion, and Colorado have allowed more sacks than Alabama.
That's insane. Negative
plays are going to be a big deal in this game. But I think before the season, you would have gone in and said, well, with Joe Milton and throwing the ball down the field and Squirrel White, Tennessee's still going to make big plays. And as you mentioned, they've had trouble doing so. Alabama, you would say, well, they're going to run the ball. They're going to go behind this line, and that bevy is stable of running backs that they have, and they're going to run. They can't do it. At least they haven't done it up to this point consistently. But they have made shot plays, a bunch of them. So it's going to be a really interesting game in this. Boy, I'm trying to get that out of my vernacular, Pete. Try to help me. Try to get really interesting game, a really interesting moment out of my lexicon of go-to phrases. I want to eliminate that.
You want some synonyms? You want intriguing,
fascinating?
I don't need that. I'll just say this. A big determining factor in that game, who can create negative plays against the other quarterback? Who can put them behind the chains? Who can come up with the sacks? And the statistics up to this point would indicate that Tennessee has a better shot at protecting its quarterback against that than Alabama. And both of them are quite adept at creating those types of negative plays. And to Ryan's point, which was an excellent one about running on Texas A&M, Texas A&M hadn't allowed a single guy to break 60 yards on them rushing all season. I mean, they had flat stoned the run, including against Alabama, and Tennessee ran it on. And, you know, Tennessee had three guys averaging over 60, and everybody was pretty productive on Saturday.
Let me ask Ryan this, because I haven't seen Tennessee a ton this year, and I don't think the world has – they haven't had, like, a big showcase game yet. Who are the guys on defense, Ryan, people need to watch in that Bama game on Saturday?
Well, the big name that everyone needs to remember is – and all they call him is Big O, and it's Amari Thomas. And Amari Thomas is really the key to that defense. And it's interesting, too, because – you have so many guys on that defense who have been there 4 years, and there's a couple have been there 5 years. And that's what I talked to Amari about on Friday, which was why stay, because he could have gone to the league last year. There were a handful of those guys could have gone to the league last year. And what they wanted to do was finish the job. Keep in mind now, these are the COVID guys, right? These are the Jeremy Pruitt guys. you know, these are the guys that at one point, I mean, they won three games one year, and they have, they've stayed the course and they stayed there and they dug in their heels. And so Amari Thomas is really the guy. He's the heart and soul of the group. And, you know, I tell you what's really interesting, guys, is I go back to, and I mean, no disrespect to anyone we covered, played with, went to school with, paid for tickets to watch back in the day. But what strikes me about when I talk to like an Amari Thomas is how smart and how deep and how multifaceted all these kids are, because you cannot play the game now the way you could have gotten away with it 25 years ago, what we used to call caveman football, right? You can just run out there. If you're big and strong and fast, you can just knock the guy down and whatever. Deion Sanders, you know, I talked about this. There's a great passage in Jeff Perlman's book, Boys Will Be Boys, about the Dallas Cowboys, about how when he went to the Cowboys, he slept in the back of the room. And when they woke him up, they said, "Don't you want to learn about the Tampa 2? He's like, "You tell me who I'm covering and I'll go cover that guy." And then he went back to sleep. And you can't really do that anymore. And college football has become so in-depth and so complicated that it's my favorite part is going in on a Friday and talking with these kids, no matter what position they play, because they're professional athletes. They just are. And they're also students. And to do what they do on a daily basis and to ingest the schemes that they do and the playbooks that they do and the film study that they do, it just blows me away. Because there's no one left on these teams that's just running around out there knocking people down and, you know, ignoring what the playbook says.
Ryan, what you said, and this is all I'm going to say about this because we're getting a little short on time, but you saying that they are professional athletes called to mind that the wisest thing that has been said recently about all of the turmoil in college football and the hearing that happened yesterday with several people from Congress, the wisest statement that has been made came from Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, who pushed back on people saying the sky is falling and this sport's going to end and Division II and III schools are going to scuttle their athletic programs. "I'd be real careful about inviting Congress to micromanage your business," end quote from Kennedy. There can't be a better quote about the future of the sport than that. But I digress. And I'll get us back to football. Hey, before we wrap up here, let's touch briefly, Pete, on Utah and USC. SC coming off a disappointing performance. Utah, they're sort of like West Coast Iowa. You know, they're not quite to that degree, but they've scuffled on offense a little bit. But that defense has been terrific. I had a guy who's close to the program tell me, "Hey, you know, Morgan Scalley's done a really good job, you know, against Lincoln Kennedy." Lincoln Kennedy, Lincoln Riley. I'm still thinking about the Washington trip last week against Lincoln Riley. This is a do or die moment for USC in terms of the college football playoff race. They won't be out of the Pac-12 race, but they'll have a hard time making the playoff if they dump a second game.
Yeah, and I think this is a huge
gut check for Lincoln Riley's USC program in terms of toughness, in terms of culture, and in terms of line of scrimmage. They got manhandled on the offensive line at Notre Dame last week. They didn't get pushed around. They got manhandled by Notre Dame's defensive front. And I would just say, pound for pound, I would expect Utah year over year to have a better defensive line than Notre Dame. Certainly a comparable one. So Utah's won three straight games in this series. And when you take a step back, it's almost like Lincoln Riley needs Morgan Scalley. Right. If you really want to like go back and look at like the world and the dynamics of it all, he needs a guy on defense who can get a team to play above its talent level, or not even to its talent level, quite frankly, where they are at USC right now. And they need a culture of toughness on that side of the ball, which we haven't seen. And then on the offensive line, look, anytime you are going in and overhauling, rebuilding a program, offensive line is the hardest part. You can't microwave an offensive line. You can't just take portal guys. I had a Power 5 coach tell me this year, "I will not take an offensive lineman from the portal. They're just not going to work. They're not going to work. You go, oh, yeah, he started here and he was here." No, like they're in there for a reason. If they were of value, that program would have found the money to keep them. So I am fascinated by this game, and I am not optimistic about USC's chances in this game.
Hey, wow. Well, to the point that we were making earlier about Penn State, Ohio State, and Tennessee and Alabama, you know, I went out to Utah in 2019 And I think they were headed out to LA, and the whole conversation that I had with Kyle Whittingham, who I've said, I'm crazy about that guy. He's the guy I'm taking in the bunkhouse stampede, the coach's battle royal. But what he said to me that day was, he said, once we beat them, we'll beat them a lot. And he knew that mentality was there. And then they went to the Coliseum and laid an egg like 3 days later. They won twice against these guys last year. Mm-hmm. And so there is, you know, there is a mentality there of, you know, it has completely flipped. And so I like Utah's chances, especially catching USC when they're catching them mentally. And I would not have said that 2 years ago because of what we're talking about. And now they make you a believer. And so it's they're strong where USC has issues. And I'm really anxious to watch that one.
Yeah, I am too. I think that's going to be a fascinating game, contrast in styles. Utah believes it's tougher. SC back against the wall, getting some criticism now. They're not happy in Southern California with, you know, what happened at Notre Dame, rivalry game, sort of getting run basically by a team that was reeling. It has all the makings, and it's also the opportunity for Caleb Williams to reassert himself as the prominent fixture in the Heisman Trophy race. Right now, that's Michael Penix. There will be other stages on other days, but if he is going to win the trophy back-to-back, it really needs to start this weekend against Utah by kind of carrying them past, who, he, by the way, gave a warrior-like performance in both games. The one in Salt Lake City and in the Pac-12 championship game when he was hurt last year. I think it's going to be fascinating theater on Saturday when those two play. Ryan, always great to talk to you, man. Thanks for stopping by. Pete and I will make some picks on the Friday edition of the College Game Day podcast along with Stanford Steve. Thanks for listening. Hope you'll subscribe so you'll never miss an episode of the College Game Day podcast.